And good day to you all. My name is Rick Abb. I'm hosting this first episode podcast of conflict management. It's a really interesting topic, and we're going to break it down in a bit. But first, we have two guests with us that have some insight. And of course, we all do, because all of us have been into management. So it should be making for a great topic here for the next little bit. And first of all, I'd like to introduce Bruce and have him say a few things. Welcome, Bruce.
Yes, thank you. Bruce Boyd is my name, and I've been immersed in conflict for 70 years now. So I have a wife, I have three children, they're all married, have a couple of grandkids. So all of those relationships produce a lot of conflict, and besides that, I have been a pastor part of my life, and I think religious people tend to be the most conflict-producing people. Otherwise, what can I say? I like to kayak, I've traveled, I teach right now, and I've led groups to Central America a number of times in Africa. I could say more, but maybe that's enough.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. It's good to have you here, and I'm sure you'll have a little bit more to contribute, not only from the personal side of life, but also from the professional side. And also with us, Agnes, say a little about yourself, please.
Okay, I'm Agnes Strike, and I've worked as a teacher, as a psychotherapist, and I've always been interested in peace and justice, I think, from the time I was a little kid. And been always interested in sort of the underdog, and that certainly brings up conflict. And I've worked with conflict in with kids in school, worked with conflict in different organizations, and I've also spent time in Liberia working with child soldiers, working with conflict with them as well. And now I'm retired and working with restorative justice and still working with conflict. So that's related to the topic that we want to work with now, and it has to do with always being right. And that's a really good topic for making conflict. Being right.
Yes, I always assume I'm right, which I'm learning is not a good assumption. For instance, when I love to watch news and listen to news, my wife really doesn't like it very well, but every now and then she gets into it, and immediately she wants to have a conversation about the news. So she'll begin asking me questions or making observations. Like recently, you know, we just have a new governor general here in Canada who doesn't speak French. So she wants to talk about that. Well, why not? What's happened? How did she get in? Well, that upsets me because I want to hear the news, but she wants to talk about the news, and so that immediately raises a conflict, and I'm right because the whole point is to hear the news. And she's right because the whole point is to have a conversation.
And how how does that end?
Well, when I remember that I love her, and that she has different priorities than I do, it ends pretty well. But when I am focused on the news, and she thinks the news is more important than our marriage, things kind of go off the rail.
And that's a great template to begin at a conversation in regards to how conflict can begin, because it's seemingly appropriate, very personal, but at the same time irks one another, and we can already see this blooming into something, which is a very positive word that's filled with color and beauty. But in this case, blooming may not be necessarily something we want.
Not that bloom, at least. No.
That reminds me a lot of what's been going on in the last couple of years in terms of all that's been going on with COVID. I mean, it started with when the Prime Minister first talked about COVID, and he would put out an idea, whether it was masks or whatever, and then people would say, he said one thing one day and the next day it's not right. Like, how come he didn't say tell us that in the first place? And it's like, if you're not right the first time around, then there's something wrong with you. You've got to be right. And it continued on right to do we vaccinate, do we not vaccinate? Do we wear masks or do we not wear masks? And it goes on and on in the whole public sphere. Like, we're all into it.
And we're all right.
Yeah, exactly.
Hang on right there, because this is a very hot topic, and everybody listening is going to be thinking, oh, well, this is what I think and this is what I think, but that's not where we're going necessarily, because we're trying to go above the topic and answering the COVID question or the marriage conflict question and understanding from 40,000 feet, what is this thing where we always need to be right or think we should be right, or what's wrong with you?
Well, from my background of having been a teacher for so long, I think a lot of it even starts right in the school system. There's always a right answer. There's not, you know, can we look at this? Can we explore this? Can we, you know, even have a wrong answer and then look back and try it again? And so, I mean, look at all the tests, exams, etc. Multiple choice, fill in the answer, there's a right answer. I remember a test where it was one of these tests that the government gave, and the answer was, the girl had to give something that was round, or and the answer was a ball, and her father was a carpenter, and she said, a washer. And I looked at the answer and I thought, that's a pretty good answer, mm-hmm. But it was the wrong answer. It should have been ball.
This is our first podcast on conflict management and regarding the topic of being right. And with us is Agnes and Bruce. So what is it with our culture? Why is it that we need to be right? Is there some kind of insight that you have?
Well, I think we've always seen people that thought, you know, things were either this or that. And sometimes things are not this or that, but we're born seeing everyone who says, I'm right. Maybe not in words, but in actions. So I think that it's just soaked into us.
Well, and that's true, because our whole justice system is set up on an adversarial sort of principle. You're either right or you're wrong. There's no in between. There's no gray areas. There's no looking at a person's background or how they might have got there at all. You're either right or you're wrong.
I'd like to bring up the gray area conversation because, as you had mentioned, Bruce, working as a pastor, I too have worked with churches and in churches. And there was one story, true story, of a businessman I had lunch with here. And of course, he had some background, but no longer found church relevant. He was sitting there, and I asked him about the question that everybody in a church would ask, would you come to church? He says, no. Then, of course, they ask, why wouldn't you come to church? His answer had been more fascinating than anybody else's, because he stared me in the eye, and he said, because you guys, as he pointed his finger to me across the table, are not good at working in gray areas, and my life is full of them. And this is not just something that pertains to a church community, but the general community, because I don't think very many people in our community, knowing that we're after the being right concept, is good at working in the gray areas.
It's difficult. I don't think we're taught how to work in the gray areas, and most of life is gray areas. But like you said, religious people are not very good at it, at least in my experience.
Well, and I also think that we're not taught at a very young age how to be curious. If we were taught how to be curious, and we were taught, like, what is this about? Like, you know, this is very interesting. What is this about? Let's explore this a little bit. But we're not taught that. We're taught, you know, what's the right answer? As opposed to, let's be curious. Let's meander and find some answers to this. Let's look. Maybe there's more than one answer.
Mm-hmm. I think this is really important. So when my wife breaks into my news, if I were curious and said, well, what's causing her to do this? Oh, she really thinks I'm an expert on this. She's asking me about it, and she wants to strengthen our relationship. But I don't naturally go there.
So what happens? Like, What I'm hearing from you is that I don't go there, so I sense some defensiveness. And so what I'm wondering is, why do we get so defensive?
Why do we get so defensive? Because my goals are more important than my relationships often.
And so we overcome anything like pertaining to relationships just to get to the gold nugget in terms of winning the race, where we want to win. And that seems to be partnered with being right.
Yeah, I want to hear the news. So I won't even say something to her sometimes. I'll just motion for her to be quiet, which doesn't go over very well.
Yeah.
So my question is then, what happens to the other person?
Well, I mean, she feels rejected. She feels like I don't value her. And she knows ways to make me pay.
I deal with neighboring, and part of my role as an advocate is to help neighbors love each other and see that. And I'm on the floor, on the road, on the street, and there's no lack of conflict in the neighborhood either. Once I was speaking on the topic, and after people come and talk to you, and there was a person from South Africa who actually asked me about why my conversations were laced with fences. And I said, oh, go on, say more. Because I kind of heard what he was saying, but I didn't really think that I heard it all right. And he says, well, you know, in your farms here in North America, in your neighborhoods here in North America, in your conversations here in North America, I hear a lot about fences, figuratively. And then I said, well, that's probably true. What do you do? He said, I actually think our conversations, our farms, and our neighborhoods don't have fences. So then our language becomes more about going to the well, or whether you might be going away from the well, which changes a little bit more as to the question of being right or wrong, because that indicates a fence. And I thought that was brilliant, and I just loved how another culture taught me a little about how we should see ourselves. And that kind of influence had really sent me buzzing, lost sleep that night, because I thought that was very insightful. And he wasn't trying to teach me anything, but he sure made me pay attention to exactly what you're talking about when you watch the news with your wife, Bruce. And when we talk about our conversations here in North America in regards to COVID, Trudeau, masks, shots, as to how we lace our words in relation to each other.
But what you're saying, were you going to say something else? What you're saying is so interesting to me, because I remember the first time I went to Liberia, I was so worried about how I was going to approach these people. And then a very good friend of mine said, approach them as if you don't know anything. And so I tried doing that. And at that time, I was doing a lot of work in bereavement. And I thought, how do I approach these people who have gone through a war and talk to them about death and bereavement when all I know is a North American way? And so that's what I did. I said, so tell me how you people grieve and what you do in your funeral ceremonies and that sort of thing. And basically, I didn't say anything. They just went on and told me everything. And then I came back to Toronto, and people were talking about what they talk about as cultural competence. You learn everything that you can about a culture, and then you're able to talk to them. And what they talk about now is, no, you do it with cultural humility. You go in not knowing anything, and you ask questions as opposed to becoming competent in their culture. And that's what you're talking about. And that's what he was talking about too. Mm. No fences. Just go in not knowing.
So we're getting to the edge of reacting to the topic and bringing in some insights to how to resolve or maybe address it differently. But we are going to wrap things up on this first installment of conflict management, which is about being right, and have a part two that will dig in a little deeper because it deserves our time as to addressing it more fully. But before we sign off, maybe Agnes and Bruce, you have just a little bit, speaking of curiosity earlier, make us curious as to how we can start rethinking this thing.
Well, one of the things, and I think this is really hard, is what I'm hearing each time we get into one of these I'm right, you're wrong, is that when we think we're right or wrong, we react without taking time to consider the other person. So, and that's why I said it's hard. So I think taking some time, or taking a breath before you respond is really important. And what you just said a little while ago, and being curious, like, what's this about? Like, why am I getting so hyped up? Why am I getting so maybe defensive?
Mm-hmm. I like that. I really like what you said about being curious, because I think that's a really important key. And certainly if we can take that breath, that'll make a big difference. But instead of knowing that I understand the situation entirely, I can begin to wonder. I wonder what the other mm-hmm. person is thinking. And instead of assuming that I know what their motives are, you know, like my wife is talking to me just to make me irritated so I can't hear the news. No, she's actually talking to me because she cares about me, as I think about that. So assuming I'm right about your motives, assuming I'm right about what's happening, if I can let those go, that'll lead me in a new direction.
Let's leave it there. This has been a great start. And I think that many of us can relate to the stories, both on a national level, because it was very current and a hot, hot topic. We don't need to say more. But also the more intimate interpersonal side of things, too, is where we see conflict also creep into our lives. And we don't want it. So we do want to invite you to come back, where Bruce, Agnes, and I, we'll dive into things a little deeper in being right. So thank you for joining us on our first installment on conflict management of being right, and we'll see you next time.